on earth was I supposed to know Hunter John and Emma got married?
Because when you broke up with him, he and Emma started dating, Claire said, trying to keep a sensible tone to her voice, trying to keep her stomach from jumping, trying to keep her mind from saying over and over, this is bad, something's wrong, this is bad.
How was I supposed to know that? I wasn't here, Sydney said, and I didn't break up with him. He broke up with me. Why do you think I left?
Claire hesitated. I thought you left because of me. I thought you left because I kept you from learning things, because I made you hate being a Waverly.
You didn't make me hate being a Waverly. This whole town did, Sydney said impatiently.
She shook her head like she was disappointed in Claire.
But if it makes you feel better, I'm leaving because of you now.
Wait, Sydney, please.
This was a setup. Didn't you see it? Emma Clark set me up to look like a servant in front of Hunter John and all my old high school friends and their expensive dresses and their boob jobs. And how did she even know I was back in town? Why did you tell her?
I didn't tell her.
Sure you didn't. How else would she have found out?
Maybe Eliza Beauford told her, Claire said. Her grandmother was one of the ladies at the luncheon in Hickory.
Sydney stared at Claire for a few long moments, her eyes shining with tears.
Claire didn't think she'd ever seen Sydney cry. They'd both been stoic children.
Neither had seemed too affected by their mother's abandonment, and neither had shed a tear. But for the first time, Claire wondered what Sydney had been holding in all this time.
Why did you let me do this?
Why did you let me go out there? Didn't you think it was unusual for Emma to be calling you to cater something meant to flaunt a lifestyle everyone else already knew about? The passion and the money. She did this so I would see it.
She didn't arrange this. Her mother did. I never even spoke to Emma.
Maybe this was just a coincidence, Sydney. Maybe it doesn't mean anything. How can you, of all people, say that? To a Waverly, there's a meaning in everything. And how can you defend them? Are you actually this comfortable with people thinking the way they do about us? I saw you when we were kids, how no one wanted to be your friend, how no boys were ever interested in you. I thought that's why you retreated into all of this.
Sydney waved widely at the food and flowers on the countertops.
Because you thought the house and grandma were all you needed. I wanted more than that. I wanted those friends out there. I wanted all of this. I was devastated when Hunter John broke up with me, but you didn't even notice. And this hurt me tonight, Claire. Doesn't it matter at all to you?
Claire didn't know what to say, which seemed to make Sydney even more upset. Sydney turned with a hiss and went to the purse she'd set by the door. She took out a small piece of notebook paper, then went to the wall phone by the walk-in pantry.
What are you doing? Claire asked.
Sydney pointedly turned her back on her and dialed the number that was on the paper.
Please, Sydney, don't leave.
Tyler, Sydney said into the receiver, it's Sydney Waverly. I'm stuck someplace and I need a ride.
Pause.
Willow Springs Road on the east side of town, number 32, a large Tudor home. Drive around back. Thank you so much.
Sydney took off her apron, dropped it to the floor. She grabbed her purse and walked out the door. Claire helplessly watched her go. Her stomach was jumping so much she felt like she was going to be sick, and she had to bend over and put her hands on her knees. She couldn't lose what was left of her family. Not so soon. She couldn't be the reason Sydney left again. The past 10 years weren't the only mystery surrounding Sydney. Claire realized she didn't even know her sister when they were kids. She didn't realize Sydney thought Hunter John was the one. She didn't realize it had hurt Sydney so much. But what Claire didn't know, those people out there on the patio did. And they had done this on purpose. Claire knew from the beginning that something had been off. Sydney was right. There was a meaning to everything, and Claire had ignored all the warning signs. She took a deep breath, then straightened. She would fix this. She went to the phone and pushed the redial button. It took a few moments, but Tyler's voice finally came on the line, slightly breathless.
Hello?
Tyler?
Yes.
This is Claire Waverly. There was a definite pause of surprise.
Claire? This is strange. I just got a call from your sister. She sounded upset.
She is. She's with me on a job. I need to ask you for a favor.
Anything,
he said. I need you to go next door to my house before you pick Sydney up here. Will you bring me some things from the house and garden? I'll tell you where the keys are hidden. About 40 minutes later, there was a knock at the back door. Claire opened the door and found Tyler there, carrying 2 cardboard boxes filled with flowers and ingredients from the house. Where should I put this? On the counter by the sink. When he passed her, she looked out to the service driveway, where Tyler's Jeep was parked with his lights still on. Sydney was sitting in the passenger seat, staring straight ahead. I saw you at work at Anna's, but I have to say, behind the scenes is even more impressive, Tyler said, taking a look around the kitchen as he set the boxes down. Claire turned. While waiting for Tyler to bring the things she needed, Claire had lined up the food and flowers. Then she had written ingredient descriptions and a list of the flowers outside on index cards so she wouldn't confuse a recipe and cause mixed signals. This was too important. They wanted roses tonight to represent their love. But when you added sadness to love, it caused regret. They wanted nutmeg because it represented their wealth, but when you added guilt to wealth, it caused embarrassment. Thank you for doing this, she said, hoping he wouldn't ask what all this was for. But why would he? He wasn't from here. He didn't know the subversive nature of what she could do. No problem. She lowered her eyes and noticed that his jeans had dirt on the knees from the garden. Sorry about the stains. I'll pay for a new pair. Sweetheart, I'm a painter. All my clothes look like this. He smiled, so warm, so calm. It almost took her breath. Anything else I can do? No, she said automatically, but then added, wait, yes. Will you ask Sydney not to leave tonight? Not until the night is over? I need to fix something. Did you two have a fight?
Sort of.
He smiled again. I'll do my best. When Claire got home, Sydney and Bay were already in bed. Sydney had obviously asked Tyler to pick Bay up at Evenell's house on their way home. At least they were going to stay the night, long enough for some things to be made right. Claire stayed up late to make a regular order of 6 dozen cinnamon buns, which she delivered early to the coffee house on the square every Sunday morning. Around midnight, she sleepily made her way up to her room to set her alarm clock. She checked in on Bay, though she knew Sydney did it several times a night. Then she walked down the hall. She had just passed Sydney's room when Sydney called out, "I had a lot of calls before you came home tonight." Claire backed up a step and peered into Sydney's room. Sydney was awake, lying in bed with her arms behind her head. Eliza Beaufort, Carrie, people at the party I didn't even know. They all said the same thing, that they were sorry. Eliza and Carrie even said they really liked me in high school, and they wished things were different. What did you say to them?
I didn't say a word.
Sydney paused, and Claire knew by her next question that she was beginning to understand. What did you give them?
I gave them lemon balm sorbet in tulip cups. I put dandelion petals in the fruit salad and mint leaves in the chocolate mousse.
That wasn't on the dessert menu, Sydney said.
I know.
I noticed Emma Clark and her mother never called. Claire leaned against the door jamb.
They caught on to what I was doing. They wouldn't eat the dessert buffet, and I was ordered to leave.
Did they pay you the remainder of your fee?
No, and I've had 2 cancellations tonight from acquaintances of theirs.
A rustle of sheets. Sydney turned in bed to face Claire. I'm sorry. They officially canceled, but they'll call again when they need something. They'll just want me to keep it a secret.
I've messed things up. I'm sorry. You didn't mess anything up, Claire said. Please don't leave, Sydney. I want you here. I may not act like it sometimes, but I do.
I'm not leaving.
I can't. Sydney sighed. As crazy as this place is, the way people think, the sameness, is what makes it safe. Bay needs that. I'm her mother. I have to give that to her.
The words were left hanging in the air, and Claire could tell immediately that Sydney wanted to take them back.
Did you leave someplace that wasn't safe? Claire had to ask.
But she should have known Sydney wouldn't answer. She shifted in her bed again, turning away.
I wish you'd do something about him, Sydney said, pointing to her open window. It's hard to sleep with that.
There was a faint purple light filtering in. Curious, Claire entered Sydney's room and went to the window, which overlooked Tyler's house. She looked down and found Tyler walking around his front yard in pajama bottoms and nothing else, a cigarette in his hand. He was radiating those tiny purple snaps again. Occasionally, he would stop and look over to the Waverly house. Then he'd resume pacing.
"You can see it?" Claire asked, still looking down at Tyler.
"Of course."
"Then you're more of a Waverly than you give yourself credit for being."
Sydney snorted. "Oh, joy."
"So what are you going to do about him?"
Claire ignored the flutter like tiny bird's wings in her chest. She moved away from the window.
"I'll take care of it."
"Just because no one expects you to do it doesn't mean you can't."
"Don't you ever want to prove people wrong?"
"I'm a Waverly," Claire said, walking back to the door. "There's nothing wrong with that."
"You're human. It's okay to date. It's okay to feel something. Go out with Tyler. Make people say, 'I can't believe she did that.'"
"You sound like Mom."
"Was that a compliment?"
Claire stopped at the door and gave a small laugh.
"I'm not sure."
Sydney sat up in bed and punched her pillow a few times.
"Wake me, and I'll help you deliver the cinnamon buns in the morning," she said as she flopped back down.
"No, I can..." Claire stopped.
"Thank you."
Chapter 6 Tuesday afternoon, Claire announced she was going to the grocery store, and Sydney asked if she and Bay could ride along. Sydney wanted to get a newspaper to check out the want ads, and, though it pained her to do so, she had to return the shirt Evenell had given her. She'd put aside the money she made from working with Claire for emergencies, so she needed extra cash for toiletries, and Bay needed kid food. Claire was a great cook, but she'd looked at Bay blankly yesterday when Bay asked if she had any pizza rolls. When they reached Fred's, Claire and Bay went into the grocery store, and Sydney walked up the sidewalk. The square hadn't changed much, although now there was a university student's sculpture that looked like an oak leaf by the fountain on the green. She returned the shirt at Maxine's and discovered that the shop had changed hands twice in the past 10 years and was now run by a stylish woman in her 50s. She didn't have an opening in the store, but she took Sydney's number and said she would call if something came up. She recognized the Waverly name when Sydney wrote it down and asked Sydney if she was related to Claire. When Sydney said yes, the woman brightened and said Claire had made her daughter's wedding cake last year and it had been the talk of all her friends from Atlanta. Then she said she would definitely call if she ever had an opening. On her way back to the grocery store from Maxine's, Sydney passed the White Door Salon. 10 years ago, it had been a trendy hair salon called Tangles, but now it was much more posh. A patron came out, and with her came the scent of chemicals cushioned by the fragrance of sweet shampoo. It was a smell that could almost lift Sydney up and make her float. Oh, how she missed that. It had been a long time since she'd been in a salon, and every time she passed one, she felt like this, like she needed to go in and pick up her shears and get to work. She started to get that prickly feeling she always got when she thought of being happy again, like she shouldn't even bother. But she'd gone to beauty school under her real name, a name David didn't know. She had to remind herself that he wouldn't find them here. He wouldn't come just because she wanted to work again. The only reason David had found her in Boise was because she'd registered Bay under her real name. She didn't think she had a choice when the daycare asked for Bay's birth certificate. She thought David would only be looking for Cindy Watkins, not Bay. She wasn't making that mistake again. Bay was a Waverly here. She patted her hair, glad that she'd put it up in a clever twist and trimmed and shaped her bangs that morning. Then she straightened her shoulders and walked in. She was giddy when she met Claire and Bay at the van. She grinned as she helped them load the bags of groceries. She kept meeting Claire's eyes until Claire finally said, "Okay, what's with the grin?" "Guess what?" Claire smiled, obviously amused by Sydney's mood.
"What?"
"I got a job. I told you I was staying. Getting a job is pretty clear, isn't it?" Claire stopped what she was doing, leaning halfway in the van. She looked genuinely perplexed.
"But you already have a job."
"Claire, you do the work of three people, and you only need help occasionally. I'll still work when you need me." Sydney laughed. Nothing was going to ruin this mood. "Maybe not at Emma's house again, but, you know." Claire straightened.
"Where did you get the job?"
"At the White Door." It was going to take all her money, including the money from the shirt she'd just returned, to rent the booth and get supplies, but she had a wonderful feeling. She still had some of her equipment, and straightening out the state-to-state reciprocity licensing wouldn't take too long. She knew there'd been a reason she'd kept renewing her license. This was the reason. She would soon make the money to put back into the emergency fund, and people in Bascom would see that she was actually skilled at something. They would come to her like they came to Claire because of what she could do.
"You're a hairstylist?" Claire asked.
"Yep."
"I didn't know that."
Claire was getting too close to asking again about where she and Bay had been, and Sydney still wasn't ready to tell her. "Listen, Bay will be starting kindergarten in the fall, but it will be a while before I can afford daycare. Will you look after her? I'll ask Evenell, too." She could tell that Claire knew what Sydney was doing, avoiding the obvious questions, but Claire didn't press her. Maybe one day she'd tell her sister about the past 10 years. One day, when there was enough trust between them to warrant such a revelation, when she knew the entire town wouldn't find out, but Sydney secretly hoped it all would just disappear as if it never happened, like a photograph fading to nothing.
"Of course I will," Claire finally said.
They started loading the bags again. Sydney looked in a bag and asked, "What is all this stuff?"
"I'm going to make pizza rolls," Claire said.
"You can buy them frozen, you know."
"I knew that," Claire said.
Then she whispered to Bay, "Is that true?"
Bay laughed.
"What about this stuff?" Sydney asked, nosing around some more in the bags. "Blueberries? Water chestnuts?" Claire shooed her away and closed the back of the van.
"I'm going to make a few dishes for Tyler," Claire said.
"Are you now? I thought you didn't want anything to do with him."
"I don't. These are special dishes."
"A love potion?"
"There's no such thing as a love potion."
"You're not going to poison him, are you?"
"Of course not. But the flowers in our garden..."
Claire paused.
"Maybe I can make him less interested."
That made Sydney laugh, but she didn't say a word. She knew a lot about men, but making them less interested had never been her specialty. Leave it to Claire to make it hers. Bay stretched out on the grass, the sun on her face. The things that happened even a week ago were fading in her mind, like the way the color pink faded until it was almost white, and you couldn't believe it was ever pink once. What color were her father's eyes? How many steps were there from their old house to the sidewalk? She couldn't remember. Bay knew all along that they were going to leave Seattle. She never told her mother this, because it was too hard to explain, and she didn't understand it fully herself. They just didn't belong there. And Bay knew where things belonged. Sometimes, when her mother would put things away at their old house, Bay would sneak in later and put the things where she knew her father wanted them to be. Her mother would put his socks in his sock drawer, but Bay would know that when he got home he would want them in the closet with his shoes. Or when her mother would put the socks with his shoes, Bay would know when that would make him mad, and she'd put them in the drawer. But sometimes his desires changed so quickly that Bay couldn't keep up with them, and he'd yell and do bad things to her mother. It had been exhausting, and she was glad to be someplace it was clear where things belonged. Utensils were always in the drawer to the left of the sink. Linens were always put in the closet at the top of the stairs. Claire never changed her mind about where things went. Bay had dreamed of this place a long time ago. She'd known they were coming here. But today, Bay was lying in the garden trying to figure out what was missing. In the dream, she was stretched out on the grass in this garden by this apple tree. The grass was soft, like in her dream, and the scent of the herbs and flowers was exactly like in the dream. But in her dream, there were rainbows and tiny specks of light on her face, like something sparkling above her. And there was supposed to be the sound of something like paper flapping in the wind. But the only sound around was the rustling of the leaves on the apple tree as it dropped apples around her. An apple hit her leg, and Bay opened one eye to look up at the tree. It kept dropping apples on her, almost like it wanted to play. She sat up suddenly when she heard Claire call her name. This was Sydney's first day at work and Claire's first day of watching Bay. Sydney hadn't allowed Bay into the garden, but Claire said it was okay to be out here as long as she didn't pick any of the flowers. Bay had been so excited to finally see the garden. She hoped she hadn't done anything wrong. "I'm right here," Bay called as she stood. She saw Claire standing at the other end of the garden by the gate. "I didn't pick any flowers." Claire held up a casserole dish covered with aluminum foil. "I'm going over to Tyler's to take him this. Come with me." Bay ran down the gravel pathway to Claire, glad she was going to see Tyler again. When she and her mother had visited last time, he let her draw on an easel, and when she showed him what she'd drawn, he hung it on his refrigerator. Claire closed and locked the gate behind them, and they walked around the house to Tyler's yard. Bay walked close to Claire. She liked the way Claire smelled. Comfortable. Like kitchen soap and garden herbs. "Aunt Claire, why does the apple tree keep dropping apples on me?" "It wants you to eat one," Claire said. "But I don't like apples." "It knows that." "Why do you bury the apples?" "So no one else will eat them." "Why don't you want people to eat them?" Claire hesitated a moment. "Because if you eat an apple from that tree, you'll see what the biggest event in your life will be. If it's good, you'll suddenly know that everything else you do will never make you as happy. And if it's bad, you'll have to live the rest of your life knowing something bad is going to happen. It's something no one should know." "But some people want to know." "Yes, but as long as the tree is in our yard, we get a say-so." They reached Tyler's steps.
"You mean it's my yard, too?"
"It's very definitely your yard, too," Claire said, smiling. Just for a moment, Claire was Bay's age, looking at her with the same happiness Bay felt. That happiness at simply belonging in a way she'd never belonged before.
"This is a pleasant surprise," Tyler said when he opened the door. Claire had taken a deep breath before she knocked, and when she saw him, she forgot to let it out. He was in a paint-splattered T-shirt and jeans.
Sometimes her very skin felt so jumpy that she wanted to crawl out of her body. She wondered what a kiss from him would do. Help? Make it worse? He smiled, not looking at all put out that she'd shown up unannounced. That's how she would feel. But he was, quite obviously, nothing like her. Come in.
I made you a casserole, she said breathlessly as she handed it to him.
It smells delicious. Please, come in. He stood back for them to enter, which was the last thing Claire wanted to do. Bay looked at her curiously. She thought something was wrong. Claire smiled at her and entered so she wouldn't worry. Tyler led them through a living room with a few pieces of comfortable furniture and a lot of boxes into a white kitchen with glass front cabinets. There was a very large breakfast nook, another room, really, off the kitchen with floor-to-ceiling windows. The floor of the nook was covered with a tarp, and there were paint supplies littered across a long hunt board. Two easels were set up.
That's the reason I bought this house. All that beautiful light, Tyler said as he put the casserole dish on the kitchen counter.
Can I draw, Tyler?
Bay asked.
Sure, kiddo. Your easel is right over there. Let me put some paper on it.
While Tyler adjusted the easel to her height, Bay went to the refrigerator and pointed to a colored drawing of an apple tree.
Look, Claire. I did that.
It wasn't that Tyler had put Bay's drawing on his refrigerator that Claire appreciated. It was that he'd left it there.
It's beautiful.
As soon as Bay was settled, Tyler walked back to Claire, smiling. Claire's eyes went to the dish worriedly. It was a chicken and water chestnut casserole made with the oil from snapdragon seeds. Snapdragons were meant to ward off the undue influences of others, hexes and spells and the like, and Tyler needed to free himself of her influence over him.
Aren't you going to eat it? She prompted.
Right now?
Yes.
He shrugged. Well, okay. Why not? Will you join me?
No, thank you. I've already eaten.
Then sit while I eat.
He took a clear glass plate from the cabinet and spooned some of the casserole onto it. He led Claire to two stools at the counter.
So, how are you and Bay getting along with Sydney at work? He asked as they took their seats. She stopped by yesterday and told me about her new job. She has a gift with hair, a real passion for it.
We're doing fine, Claire said, watching Tyler as he brought a forkful of the casserole to his mouth. He chewed and swallowed, and she thought for a moment that maybe she shouldn't be watching. It was almost sensual, his full lips, the bob of his Adam's apple. She shouldn't feel this way about a man who was going to be free of her in a few seconds.
Ever thought of having kids? He asked.
No, she answered, still staring.
Never?
She took her mind off his mouth and thought about it.
Not until you just asked me.
He took another bite, then pointed to his plate with his fork.
This is wonderful. I don't think I've ever eaten as well as I have since I met you.
Maybe it just took a few minutes to kick in.
Next you're going to tell me I remind you of your mother. I expect more creativity from you.
Eat.
No, you're nothing like my mother. Her free spirit doesn't include anything to do with the kitchen.
She raised her brows at this bit of information. He smiled at her and took another bite.
Go on. You know you want to ask.
She hesitated a moment, then gave in and asked.
How was she a free spirit?
They're potters, my parents.
I grew up in an artist's colony in Connecticut.
You didn't want to wear clothes? You didn't have to. You didn't want to wash the dishes? You broke them and made some more. Do a little pot and sleep with your best friend's husband. It was all okay.
It wasn't for me, though.
I can't help my artistic nature, but security and routine mean more to me than they do to my parents. I just wish I was better at it.
You're looking at an expert, she thought, but didn't say it out loud. He would probably like that about her.
2 more bites, and he'd cleaned his plate. She looked at him expectantly. Did you like it? How do you feel? He met her eyes, and she almost fell off her stool from the force of his desire. It was like a hard gust of autumn wind that blew fallen leaves around so fast they could cut you. Desire was dangerous to thin-skinned people. Like I want to ask you on a date? Claire sighed, and her shoulders dropped. Damn. There's music on the quad at Orion every Saturday night in the summer. Come with me this Saturday.
No, I'll be busy.
Doing what? Making you another casserole. Sydney's third day at work was the third day she went without a single walk-in wanting her to cut their hair, and not a single regular White Door patron wanting her to do their shampoo when their own stylist was running behind. And that was the high point. At lunchtime, since she didn't have anything else to do, and she had already eaten the olive sandwich and sweet potato chips Claire had packed for her, Sydney offered to fetch the other stylists' lunches. They were a nice bunch, and they were encouraging and kept telling Sydney it would get better, but that didn't extend to sharing their clients. Sydney had to find some way to get how good she was out there, to start bringing people in. At the coffee house and at the Brown Bag Cafe, Sydney chatted up the workers and offered them discounts if they wanted to come to the White Door and let Sydney cut their hair. None seemed too enthusiastic, but it was a start. She walked back to the salon and put the bags of lunches in the break room. Then she placed the lattes and iced coffees at the stations where some stylists were still working. The last station she went to was Terry's. Sydney smiled and put her soy latte on the counter. "Thanks, Sydney," Terry said, elbow deep and highlighting her client's blonde hair. The client's head shot up, and Sydney saw that it was Ariel Clark. Despite her initial desire to demand an apology for what Ariel had put her and Claire through that Saturday night, Sydney held her tongue and walked away without a word. She wanted to salvage what was left of her day. Ariel Clark, however, had other ideas. Later, Sydney was sweeping around a station at the other end of the salon when Ariel walked up to her. Emma looked a lot like her mother. The same ice-blonde hair, the same blue eyes, the same confident swagger. Even back when Sydney and Emma were friends, Ariel had always been standoffish toward Sydney. When Sydney spent nights at the Clark house, Ariel had always been polite, but there was something about her that made Sydney feel like being there was charity, not acceptance. When Ariel didn't move from the only spot left to sweep, Sydney finally stopped. She managed a polite smile, even though she was choking the broom handle. If she was going to make a success out of this venture, she couldn't whack White Door clients over the head with a broom, no matter how much they deserved it. "Hello, Mrs. Clark. How are you? I saw you at the party. I'm sorry we didn't get to say hello."
"Understandable, sugar. You were working.
It would have been inappropriate." Her eyes slid down the broom to the sad pile of hair Sydney had swept up.
"You're working here, I gather?"
"Yes." "You don't actually cut hair, do you?" she asked, as if appalled by the thought. A fine beginning, Sydney thought, if everyone in town who knew her was going to react to the news this way.
"Yes, I do actually cut hair." "Don't you need some sort of degree to do that, sugar?"
Her fingertips were going numb and turning white from gripping the broom handle so tightly.
"Yes."
"Hmm," Ariel said.
"So I hear you have a daughter. And who was her father?"
Sydney knew enough not to let Ariel see her vulnerable spots. Once some people knew how to hurt you, they would do it again and again. Sydney had a lot of experience with that.
"No one you know." "Oh, I'm certain of that.
Anything else, Mrs. Clark?"
"My daughter is very happy. She makes her husband very happy.
She's a clerk, after all, Sidney said.
Exactly. I don't know what you hoped coming back here, but you can't have him.
That's what this was all about?
I know this is going to come as a surprise, but I didn't come back to get him.
So you say. You Waverleys have your tricks. Don't think I don't know.
As she walked away, she flipped her cell phone out of her purse and started dialing.
Emma, darling, I have the most delicious news, she said.
Around 5 o'clock that afternoon, Sidney was going to give up for the day and leave. That's when she saw a man in a nice gray suit at the reception desk, and she got a sinking feeling. This day was never going to end. Hunter John asked the receptionist something, and she turned and pointed at Sidney. He walked across the salon to her. She should have walked away to the break room, avoided him entirely, but memories kept her there. At 28, his sandy hair was thinning. A better cut would hide it. His hair was still beautiful and shiny, which meant he still had what he had when he was young, but he was losing it. He was turning into someone else.
I heard you were working here, Hunter John said when he reached her.
Yes, I imagine you did. She crossed her arms over her chest. You have lipstick on your neck. He rubbed his neck sheepishly.
Emma came to tell me at work.
So you took over your family's business?
Yes.
Madison Enterprises was a group of mobile home manufacturing plants about 20 minutes outside of Bascom. Sidney had worked as a receptionist in the front office the same summers Hunter John had interned there. They used to meet in his father's office when he went to lunch and they'd make out. Sometimes Emma would drive out when things were slow, and the three of them would sit on the stacks of lumber outside the warehouse and smoke. What was his life like now? Did he really love Emma? Or had she just gotten him with sex, as Clark women were wont to do? It was Emma, after all, who told Sidney how to give the perfect blowjob. It was only years later that a man finally told Sidney she'd been doing it wrong. It suddenly occurred to Sidney that Emma had told her the wrong way to do it on purpose. Sidney had no idea Emma even liked Hunter John. And Hunter John had always said Emma was a little too high-strung for him. Sidney had never put the two together in her mind. But then, she'd been oblivious to a lot of things back then.
"Can I have a seat?" Hunter John asked.
"Do you want me to cut your hair? I'm great at it."
"No, I just don't want it to look like I only stopped by to talk," he said as he sat.
She rolled her eyes. "Heaven forbid."
"I wanted to say a few things to you, to clear the air."
"It's the right thing to do."
Hunter John always did the right thing. That's what he'd been known for. The golden boy, the good son.
"That night at the party, I didn't know you'd be there, and neither did Emma. We were as surprised as you. Ariel hired Claire. No one knew you were working for her."
"Don't be naive, Hunter John. If Eliza Beaufort knew, everyone knew."
Hunter John looked disappointed.
"I'm sorry for the way it happened. But it was for the best. As you saw, I'm happily married now."
"Good Lord," Sidney said. "Does everyone think I came back just for you?"
"Why did you come back, then?"
"Is this not my home, Hunter John? Is this not where I grew up?"
"Yes, but you never liked who you were here."
"Neither did you."
Hunter John sighed. Who was this person? She didn't know him at all anymore. "I love my wife and kids. I have a great life, and I wouldn't trade it for the world."
"I did love you once, Sidney. Breaking up with you was one of the hardest things I've ever done."
"So hard that you sought comfort in marrying Emma?"
"We married so soon because she got pregnant. Emma and I just grew close after you left. Complete serendipity."
Sidney had to laugh. "You're being naive again, Hunter John." She could tell he didn't like hearing that.
"She is the best thing that ever happened to me."
He was saying that because he gave up Sydney, his life was great. She didn't like hearing that. Did you go to Notre Dame? Did you travel around Europe like you wanted to?
No. Those are old dreams. Seems to me you gave up a lot of dreams.
I'm a Madison. I had to do what's best for my name.
And I'm a Waverly, so I get to curse you for it.
He gave a little start, like she meant it, and it gave Sydney a curious sensation of power. But then Hunter John smiled.
Come on. You hate being a Waverly.
You should go, Sydney said. Hunter John stood and reached for his wallet.
And don't you dare leave money for a pretend haircut.
I'm sorry, Sydney. I can't help who I am.
Obviously, neither can you.
As he walked away, she thought what a sad thing it was to say about herself that she'd only ever loved one man, and that man had to be that man, one who had from the beginning relegated her to a youthful indiscretion when she thought it would be forever. She wished she really did know a curse.
I was getting worried, Claire said, when Sydney came into the kitchen that evening. Bay's upstairs.
Sydney opened the refrigerator and took out a bottle of water.
I stayed late.
How was your day?
It was fine.
She walked over to the sink where Claire was rinsing a bowl of blueberries.
So what are you making? Something to take to Tyler again?
Yes. Sydney picked up the bouquet of blue flowers laying on the counter by the sink and put them to her nose.
What are these?
Bachelor's buttons. I'm going to sprinkle the blueberry tarts with their petals.
And what do they mean?
Bachelor's buttons make people see sharper, helpful for finding things like misplaced keys and hidden agendas, Claire said easily. The power came so naturally to her.
So you're trying to make Tyler realize you're not what he's looking for?
Claire smiled slightly.
No comment.
Sydney watched Claire work for a while.
I wonder why I didn't inherit it, she said absently.
Inherit what?
That mysterious Waverly sensibility you and Evenell have.
Grandma had it, too.
Did Mom?
Claire turned off the spigot and reached for a hand towel to dry her hands.
It was hard to tell. She hated the garden. I remember that much.
She wouldn't go near it.
I don't mind the garden, but I guess I'm more like Mom than anyone in the family.
Sydney grabbed a few blueberries and popped them in her mouth.
I don't have a special thing like Mom. And Mom moved back here, so you had a stable place to live and go to school, just like I did for Bay.
Mom didn't move back because of me, Claire said, as if surprised Sydney thought that.
She moved back so you could be born here.
She left when I was 6, Sydney said, as she went to the open door to the sunroom porch and looked out. If it weren't for those photographs of Mom Grandma gave me, I wouldn't even remember what she looked like. If I meant something to her, she wouldn't have left.
This is the end of disc number 3. Please insert disc number 4. This is disc number 4.
If it weren't for those photographs of Mom Grandma gave me, I wouldn't even remember what she looked like. If I meant something to her, she wouldn't have left.
What did you do with those photos? Claire asked. I'd forgotten about them.
One moment, Sydney was tilting her head and taking a deep breath of the herbs drying on the porch. The next moment, she was blown out the door, transported on the wind back to Seattle. She landed in the living room of the townhouse, staring at the couch. She walked to it and lifted one side. There, under the couch, was an envelope marked Mom. It had been so long since she'd felt like looking at the photos that she'd forgotten they were there. These were photos of Lorelai's life on the road, a life Sydney had tried to emulate for so long.
She took the envelope and leafed through the stack of photos, and she found one that made her head want to explode with fear. There was her mother, maybe 18 years old, standing in front of the Alamo. She was smiling and holding a handmade sign that read, "No more Bascom. North Carolina stinks." When Sydney was a teenager, she thought it was the funniest thing. But what if David found the envelope? What if he figured it out? She heard him at the front door. She put the envelope back under the couch quickly. He was coming in. He was going to find her there. "Sydney." Sydney opened her eyes with a start. She was back in Bascom. Claire was beside her, shaking her arm. "Sydney?" "I forgot to take them with me," Sydney said. "The photos. I left them." "Are you all right?" Sydney nodded, trying to get a hold of herself. But she had a bad feeling that David would know she'd been there. He'd know she'd been thinking about something she left behind. She'd opened a door. Even now, she thought, she could smell his cologne near her, as if she'd brought him back with her. "I'm fine. I was just thinking of Mom." Sydney shrugged, trying to get rid of the tension in her shoulders. David didn't know where the photos were. He wouldn't find them. That evening, Evenell put on a short-sleeved robe over her nightgown and walked into her kitchen. She had to step around boxes full of Band-Aids and matches, rubber bands, and Christmas ornament hooks. Once in the kitchen, she went searching for microwave popcorn. She pushed aside toasters and their original boxes and aspirin she'd bought in bulk. She didn't want any of this stuff. She didn't even particularly like having it around. She tried to keep it all in corners and unused rooms, but some of it always managed to spill out. One day someone was going to need it, so it was better to have it around than go looking for it at 3 in the morning at the all-night Walmart. She turned when she heard a knock. Someone was at her door. Now this was a surprise. She didn't get many visitors. She lived in a small neighborhood of old arts and crafts houses, an area that had become a little more fancy than when she and her husband, who had worked for the phone company, moved there. Her neighbors were mostly couples in their 30s and 40s without children and commuter jobs that brought them home after dark. She'd never even spoken to her next-door neighbors, the Hansons, who moved in 3 years ago. But the fact that they'd told their lawn man to keep their neighbor's lawn neat, too, for the sake of the neighborhood, spoke volumes. But it got her lawn mowed for free, so who was she to complain? She turned on the porch light, then opened the door. A short, square, middle-aged man with sharply cut dark blonde hair stood there. His slacks and shirt were wrinkle-free, and his shoes shone like firecrackers. He had a small suitcase at his feet.
"Fred!"
"Hello, Evenell."
"What on earth are you doing here?"
His face was drawn, but he tried to smile.
"I need a place to stay. You were the first person I thought of." "Well, I can see why. I'm old and you're gay."
"Sounds like a perfect relationship." He was trying to be upbeat, but in the glow of the porch light he was as shiny as glass, and one small shove and he'd break into 1,000 tiny pieces.
"Come in."
Fred picked up his suitcase and entered, then stood in the living room looking like a little boy who had run away from home. Evenell had known Fred all his life. He won the county spelling bee 2 years in a row. Then he lost to Lorelei Waverly in the 4th grade. Evenell had come to see Lorelei compete, and afterward she found Fred crying outside the gymnasium. She'd given him a hug, and he made her promise not to tell his father that he was so upset. His father told him he should never cry in front of other people. What would they think of him?
"Shelley came in early today. She caught me in my pajamas in my office. It's been easier just to stay at work."
"I know what to do there," Fred said.
"But word is probably out now, and I can't stay in a motel. I don't want to give James that kind of satisfaction. Hell, I don't even know if he's noticed I haven't been there. He hasn't called to ask where I've been. Nothing." I don't know what to do.
Have you talked at all?
I tried, like you said. After that first night, I slept at the store. I called him. He was at work. He said he didn't want to talk about it, that just because I finally noticed something was wrong didn't mean I could make it right now. I told him about the wine I bought from Claire. He said I was crazy. Crazy for wanting things the way they were when we were first together. I don't understand what happened. One moment we were fine. 6 months later, I suddenly realize I can't remember the last time we had a regular conversation. It's like he's been leaving me by degrees, and I didn't even notice. How does a person not notice that?
Well, you can stay here as long as you'd like. But if anyone asks, I get to say my undeniable womanliness turned you straight.
I make terrific Belgian waffles with a wonderful peach compote. Just tell me what you want me to cook and I'll cook it. She patted his cheek.
Not that anyone will believe me.
She showed him to the guest bedroom down the hall. There were a few boxes of first aid kits and 3 kerosene heaters in the room, but she'd been keeping this room mostly clear and the bed made with fresh sheets every week for over 30 years. There was a void, which still existed, just better concealed these days, left in her home after Evenel's husband died. During those sad days following his death, Lorelei would spend the night with Evenel, but she stopped as she got older and wilder. Then Claire would stay the night sometimes when she was young, but she liked to stay at home mostly. Evenel never imagined Fred would be staying here one day. But surprises were nothing new to her. Like opening a can of mushroom soup and finding tomato instead. Be grateful, and eat it anyway. Fred put a suitcase on the bed and looked